Phoenix 98 FM.
And I'm very pleased to be joined in the studio by Brentwood Borough Council leader Louise McKinley. Hi Louise.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for coming in today. I know you've had to shuffle your schedule around a little bit to get here. It's very good of you to come in. We want to talk about Crossrail. Now, just as a little bit of an introduction, and I have to admit, until about 8 a.m. this morning, I didn't really know an awful lot about what was going on with Crossrail. But Crossrail will be the new high-frequency convenient and accessible railway for London and the South East. From 2017, Crossrail will travel from Shenfield and Abbeywood in the east via twin tunnels under central London to Maidenhead and Heathrow in the west. And the aim is to reduce crowding on London's network. Crossrail will serve Brentwood and Shenfield stations. And from what I've seen, the changes at Brentwood station, the ticket hall has been refurbished. Step-free access from streets to platforms will be delivered by December 2013. Crossrail works will follow and include platform extensions, new signage for Crossrail trains, help points, customer information screens and CCTV. A little bit more controversial at Shenfield, there'll be an additional platform for Crossrail trains and new cycle tracks installed, new signage, help points, customer information screens and CCTV. Also new sidings which will be reconfigured to provide stabling for the trains. There'll also be track works to allow for a turnback facility. So, Louise, what are the major concerns about the Crossrail project in the borough?
I think the concerns really fall under four particular areas. One is the disruption or potential disruption to local residents. Yeah. Clearly, when the construction starts, the detail around that would obviously lead us to then look at what that impact could be. Secondly, the disruption to local businesses and traders, particularly in Shenfield Broadway. Yeah. We know from last year when there was some gas works and Shenfield effectively closed down for 3 weeks that the traders did report a significant loss.
Yeah.
And again, once we see the detail around what Crossrail exactly is looking to do, then we can look at that in more detail. The third area is around car parking.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we're going to be discussing that in some more detail.
Yes.
Later on.
Yeah.
But the biggest issue, certainly here and now, is the lack of information that's coming forward.
This is what I thought. Now, to address these concerns, you met last week with Terry Morgan, Chair of Crossrail, to discuss the concerns of Brentwood residents and businesses. And Kay Thurgood, representing Shenfield Traders, was also at the meeting. How did that meeting go?
I thought it was a very positive meeting, in as much we outlined very clearly the concerns that both I was hearing and that Kay was hearing from some of the businesses and local residents.
Yeah.
About this, you know, well, what is the detail? What is going to happen? When are the works going to start? And what does it mean in the short and medium term?
Sure.
And the need to actually start communicating far more with local people. And to be fair, I think Crossrail recognised that.
Okay.
And that's a big step forward, because up until now, we haven't had so much of a positive dialogue with them.
Yes, good. Well, I know Kay Thurgood was very appreciative to be involved in these meetings, and to yourself in the cooperation that she's had from you. Can we talk about Friars Avenue car park, first of all? There was a thing initially that Crossrail wanted to compulsorily purchase the car park, and back in June, Councillor Liz Cohen said in the next 2 years, Crossrail will start construction in Shenfield, and although we don't know exactly what their plans are, we know that they're going to take away a large number of parking spaces. Well, in actual fact, that's now not going to happen. And is it because there's been a U-turn on that one, I believe, from Crossrail? Is that right?
There's been a U-turn in as much, I think it was around 3 or 4 weeks after our previous meeting with the chairman, the council received a letter from Crossrail saying that they were going to be starting compulsory purchase process of the car park. And I have to say that wasn't actually mentioned in the meeting with the chairman, so you can understand that not only came as a shock but somewhat of a disappointment.
Yeah.
That there'd been no sensible discussion before then. And what we very much said is, well, why is this necessary?
Yeah.
We know already that there is an agreement in place that Crossrail can have some of the car park during the construction. That is a conversation that we actually want to revisit with them around exactly what the extent of that will be.
Okay.
But clearly, compulsory purchasing the car park, why is that necessary? It would cause absolute havoc locally. And why on earth would Crossrail need that car park once the work is done?
Right.
So myself and Eric Pickles set about launching a petition. We had over 2,000 signatures, which we passed on to Crossrail, and we also had meetings with them to outline the concerns locally and to say, you know, we are meeting regularly with you. Let's sit down. Let's look at exactly what it is that you need these car parks for.
Yep.
And see if we can find a solution that can work on both sides.
Okay, so it's still quite likely that they're going to need a portion of that car park to put their work site, is that right? Or...
Well, there's not just that car park, there's Hunter Avenue car park, yes, as well. And that's why later on in the year, we're actually getting together with them again to start looking at some of the detail. What came out of our meeting last week was around the impact that some of the network rail work will have on Crossrail. And what they're looking to do is obviously do as much work in a joined up way as possible. Okay. So Network Rail have some plans which are coming forward for some, I believe it's for some new track to be laid. And until those plans are crystallised, it's hard for Crossrail to actually see how they can piggyback onto that. So they've said that towards the end of this year they should have more information, and obviously once they have got that, then we can sit down and see what the impact would be in terms of the car parks and what they would need to do.
Okay. Have you found it a bit frustrating getting information from Crossrail?
I think you can probably substitute the word a bit with a lot.
Okay.
Yes, it has been. I mean, people want information. I want information.
Yes,
and
yeah.
And it's, you can't plan for something as significant as this if you don't know what's happening.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it has been very frustrating at times.
Well, we'll have to see if we can get them in here and see if we can get any information from them. Anyway, then in July, a report came out that a new long-stay car park looks set to be built to alleviate the impact of Crossrail on traders in Shenfield. It's a new facility, 110 spaces, constructed on a 7-hectare site in Alexander Lane, creating what has been dubbed a park and stride.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a bit more about that, can you?
Yes, I mean, whilst we're obviously waiting for Crossrail and their plans, what we do know is there's clearly going to be an impact on Shenfield and the surrounding area.
Yeah.
And anyone that's familiar with the station area at the moment will know that the taxis, for example, back a long way up, that the Broadway gets extremely congested, and this is without Crossrail coming.
Right.
So what we have said is, you know, we need to be planning for what would inevitably be an increase in footfall in Shenfield. And rather than try and drive more people in their cars into Shenfield, you know, where are they going to go?
Yes, yeah.
We've tried to take a more of a pragmatic view and say, well, are there other options?
Right.
So what we've been looking at is the some of the sites down Alexander Lane. There's obviously quite a lot of space down there to enable people to come in, park their car, and then, as you say, stride to the station.
Okay, yeah.
And the idea is that would be for commuters, long-term stay, and for people who have season tickets.
Okay.
Which would then mean that the two car parks in Shenfield itself, Sir Friars Avenue and Hunters Avenue, could actually be turned over to essentially be shoppers' car parks.
Okay.
So maximum stay, whether that's 2 hours, 3 hours, yeah, that's all the detail that we need to work through.
Yeah, it's quite easy to control, really, I guess. Yeah.
But what we don't want is people coming into those car parks, parking all day and going up to London or going up to Westfield.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
clearly, if we're going to prevent them from doing that, we have to provide them with somewhere else to park. So that's the idea.
Okay. Well, now there's sort of two phases here. There's car parking during construction and car parking post-construction. Mm-hmm. During construction, car parking will be free. But won't that just fill the car parks with commuters, the shoppers' car parks? How are you going to prevent that happening?
You're right that what we have proposed is that during the works that the car parks, so Friars Avenue and Hunters Avenue, are free.
Yeah.
But that could only happen if we limited the length of time that people stay, because, you know, you're right, otherwise you're just going to be providing free parking for commuters.
Sure.
Which is obviously not what this is about.
Yeah.
We want to be encouraging people to come into Shenfield.
Okay.
To enable them to continue to use the local shops during what will be a difficult time.
Okay, so presumably there'd be some kind of ticketing system, even though it's free, is that right, so that you've got a ticket that says you can only park there for 3 hours, is that
well the detail we need to look through? I mean,
okay.
I guess there's two points to this. One, dependent on where we're at with the provision of the other car park as to whether we've already turned Hunters Avenue and Friars over into these shoppers car parks, or as you say, if it is still the case that the other car park is under construction, that the car parks in Shenfield would still for a period of time be used by both commuters and shoppers, but it would be a limited stay that would be free.
Right.
Rather than anything else.
Okay. Now, as it stands, work is due to begin in December 2014, and that's probably just about the worst time for the local traders. Do you think it's likely to affect the busy Christmas shopping period, and what can be done to minimise the disruption?
That was, as you would expect, one of the key points that Kay raised on behalf of the
yep,
traders, exactly what was meant by December 2014.
Okay.
It's their busiest time. What Crossrail have done is block out some time time over Christmas, and they specified that that was effectively from Christmas Day.
Ah, right.
To be doing some work, because that is the time throughout the year when the railway is least used for obvious reasons, but that they would be doing a lot of exploratory work in December, and basically nobody would even know they were there, was what they were saying, rather than actually be digging and actually causing disruption.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, yes, that was, as you'd appreciate, a concern, because the last thing we want is, you know, couple of weeks in the run-up to Christmas
trade,
the traders are hit. Yeah.
Well, I think people will notice them certainly in January when they start work for real. It's quite a huge project, I imagine, is it?
It's a massive project. Yeah. But there will be a lot of preliminary work that has to go into it.
Okay. Now, I also understand it's possible that it might be necessary to have a contraflow traffic system in place in Hutton Road during the works. And again, this could affect trade in the area. Do you know any more about this?
I've not heard about that.
Okay.
It's news
all
to
right.
me. A contraflow in Hutton Road.
I have to admit, I spoke to Kay Thurgood this morning, and this was one of the things that she raised, whether it's a sort of an actual thing that she's heard or just something that people are worrying about, because there were previous works, I think, as you mentioned earlier, where there was temporary traffic lights and a contraflow system, and they found it did affect trade. And I think Kay was concerned if there was anything like that again, it could sort of severely affect them. But obviously, I suppose details like that are still a bit sketchy at the moment, aren't they?
They're very sketchy. Yeah. I mean, Crossrail did commit to having a public meeting October, November, later this year, that they would be prepared to come and actually speak to residents and businesses to talk about the plans in some more detail, because by then they should have a better understanding of the timeline and what we can expect at what time. And for the council to actually facilitate that meeting, so we would look at arranging that locally.
Yep.
And it would obviously then, once we can understand what their time frame is, it would enable us to start looking at some of our planning processes and the timeline associated with that, because once they submit a planning application, then we can actually, our role kicks off, because we can then start with some of the consultation publicly and make sure that people are aware of the proposals before any decisions made.
Okay, lovely. What about our local MP? You mentioned Eric Pickles earlier. Do you know if he's getting involved in this very much?
He's very involved in it. Yep. As I mentioned, it was along with Eric that we launched the petition around Friars Avenue. And I have had meetings with Terry Morgan and Eric Pickles as well. And I know that following the concern that was raised about Friars Avenue, that he also met with him specifically on that issue.
Right.
As did I. So, yes, he's very involved.
Excellent. Good man. Okay. Well, thank you for updating us on that. I mean, after the next meeting, which you say is October, November time, is it? Maybe we could get you and a few others in the studio, including Kay, and go over any sort of concerns that are current then. Would that be okay?
That sounds good.
Fantastic. All right. Lovely. Well, while I've got you here, now, the elephant in the room is what's been in the Brentwood Gazette and all over Twitter this week, and it's the, shall we call it the caseload of local councillors. Now, I know Russell Quirk came into Phoenix earlier in the week and had his say about that situation. Of course, the stats show, and correct me if I'm wrong, because this is from way back in the back of my mind, that there was a sort of league table of the number of cases taken on by councillors, and the local Conservatives, I think, were kind of down the bottom of the list. The bottom five all handled no cases, and they were all Conservatives. Now, Russell Quirk had his say about this the other day, and we're always very anxious to try and be balanced here at Phoenix. So the right of reply is yours. The floor is yours.
Thank you. I didn't hear the interview with him, so I can't obviously comment directly on what he said. What I would say is that the figures that were in the Gazette this week don't actually tell the true story, because when I first saw the table ahead of it being published, it just didn't ring true to me.
Right.
So I actually did some more investigation myself and asked for some additional information from the council officers.
Okay.
And I think, not that it's relevant to him personally, but William Lloyd was top with 155 apparently in the Gazette.
If I remember rightly, yes.
But when you actually look at the number of casework items that included, it was actually only 34, because the remaining numbers related to administrative emails, so organising meetings, etc.
Right.
Matters that were outside of Brentwood Council's remit, and inquiries and emails that you would expect him to put forward in his capacity as the leader of his group.
Okay.
The whole principle around the casework is that it's there to make it easier for members and officers to deal with ward-based queries. It's not mandatory.
No.
It is something which I personally do use and which I find very useful. But that's just the way I operate. I find it easier, obviously, with all the correspondence that I get as leader. I can separate the two out very simply by logging it through the members' casework.
Okay. Do you think it should be mandatory? Because otherwise it gets very misleading if someone does look at those figures. And also, you know, if there is a system in place, surely it should be used, and it should be used in the correct way. If William Lloyd has been using it to, count phone calls.
Distort figures.
Well, I wouldn't say that. But, you know, if anyone's been using it in the wrong way, perhaps there should be guidelines and people should stick to them. What do you think?
I just think, you know, whether it's William putting stuff through that isn't strictly casework, whether it's other members not putting casework through, we can get caught up in this all day. I think that the true test is, are the councillors delivering and resolving the issues?
Right.
And, you know, I'm not fussed either way, people want to use it.
But it would be nice to have an accurate measure of that for the people in Brentwood. And maybe, you know, if there is a system in place that could be tightened up to give an accurate reflection, I think the voters would appreciate, you know, being able to see some figures that they can believe.
Well, I mean, you know, we can all drive around and see an overhanging branch and send an email off and get an extra tick next to our name. I know other councillors who will actually, you know, get out the car, photo it,
right,
go into the depot, make sure it gets done, chase three times it's been, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You see where I'm going with this.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
And this is why I think, you know, I'm not taking anything away from any councillor. And I actually, you know, to be fair, put on my blog that there are a number cross-party who work extremely hard.
Sure.
I just think we've got to put the figures into context and not get caught up on, you know, some councillor of the year. Just because somebody has raised more queries than others. And there are a number of very active councillors who have scored low in terms of the casework.
Right.
That doesn't mean to say that they're not doing their job. And certainly in terms of my group, we're obviously running the council. So the commitment and the time that goes into it is, as you would expect, far greater than it would be for the other parties, because we have more responsibility.
All right, fair enough. Well, Louise McKinley, I'm glad you've had your say on that. And thanks for coming to talk to us about Crossrail, especially as you've had to sort of squeeze it into your schedule today. Very much appreciate that, and hopefully you'll come back, when there's more to tell us. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Phoenix 98 FM.